All information contained in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider your individual circumstances. You should consider the appropriateness of this information with regards to your individual objectives, financial situation, and needs. Welcome to Sharing More Than the Sheets, a podcast to help you and your partner make better financial and lifestyle decisions so that you can both focus on the things that you love. I'm your host, Michael Curry, financial planner, green thumb, husband, and just dad. As a financial advisor, I talk to my clients about many different parts of their financial journey. And part of that is looking at estate planning. Many times in our conversations, as we're talking about, you know, their estate plan, wills, the idea of a simple will kit or a DIY will comes up. And I have a lot of clients ask me, hey, look, well, I've just got a will I bought from the post office, or I've just written something out on a piece of paper. Isn't that good enough? And my answer is usually, well, maybe potentially it's better than nothing, but I'm not a lawyer. So just to make things a lot easier, I've invited a lawyer, a very qualified lawyer to talk about this topic, Romy Full James, who is the principal and founder of Full James Law, is with us here today. So Romy, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What do you think, Romy? So am I right in saying that it's sort of better than nothing, but it's really not good enough in most cases?
Yeah, there's probably tiers, to be honest. So the writing something on a piece of paper would be my least preferred option. In fact, potentially having more headache than benefit, mainly because if you don't sign a will properly, then we end up having to apply to the court to have that accepted as a will, and there can be contention around that, and that can be an expensive process in of itself. But if you're using a template will, whether that's online or post office, that can be a good way to give control to somebody else to handle your estate. But I will say that most of the estates I end up helping with when somebody has passed away do end up being some form of, you know, template or post office will. And the reason that those family members end up seeing a lawyer is because there are problems. And those problems can be as simple as I've had wills where the testator, so the person making the will, they've drawn arrows, you know, trying to link names here to names there. I've had one recently where the will makers just said, I leave everything to this person to distribute for me, which is an absolute headache in terms of validity of the will, etc. And so there are all these little nuances in succession law, which obviously I won't bore you with today, but that's what makes doing your own DIY will so complex. As you can think, you know, to the average person, this makes complete sense. But in that legal context, it just causes administrative hurdles and legal hurdles.
Well, that, and also, am I right in saying that, see, when I did my will, when my wife and I did our wills, I had been telling clients to do theirs for about 10 years till we did ours. And I remember when it was done, it was a very formal process. Even the document, the pages weren't double-sided. They had to be bound. They couldn't just be stapled. There was all these things to, you know, there were all these precautions in place to make sure that the will is still valid. And am I right in saying that if someone does like a simple will or just a DIY type of thing, that it does leave a lot of room as well for that will to just be easily contested or just deemed as invalid as well? Like, hey, look, you know, this wasn't done properly, or what about this? Or there's just too many loose ends.
Absolutely. And, you know, then it really is up to your family members who are in a state of grief at this time to then, you know, take that legal process underway. And it's not only expensive for your estate, but it's, you know, when we're dealing with people that are grieving, it's such a sensitive time. It's a private time. And when your family is forced to then be on the phone with a lawyer and go through a court process, it's incredibly difficult. And so, yeah, there are a lot of rules. There's a lot of nuances. The other really big benefit to having a lawyer involved in signing is, yes, all the administrative stuff is done, but you've also got then a very qualified person who's taken notes and recorded, you know, that signing meeting to be able to testify on your behalf. So remembering that at this point you've passed away, you can't come back and say, I meant this or I meant that. So you're really left with those witnesses that witnessed your will and saying that, yep, it's valid. We signed it all in the one time, et cetera, et cetera. And when a lawyer's involved in that process, obviously we can then give a lot more, solid insight into that time period. The other thing with will kits that, or DIY wills that get left to the side is obviously that general estate planning piece about what else you might own, or capacity. Capacity is such a big one. We see people not consider this, your enduring power of attorney forms. What happens if you were to get unwell, end up in hospital, not be able to make decisions for yourself? Who has that legal authority to act on your behalf? And then obviously, if you have other structures in play, if you have family trust, company, self-managed super, anything like that, you really need a thorough estate plan, and a DIY will just isn't going to cut it. And obviously, you're just losing that ability to have a conversation with a qualified professional who can give you some insight. One of the biggest things I talk to every potential client that comes across my path is the power of testamentary trusts, and some of those bigger advice pieces that really set apart are just a standard will from an actual lawyer drafted will.
And I'd actually love to get into testamentary trusts, but just before that as well, I want to ask you, with am I right in saying as well that when it comes to an estate, if family members and anyone, ex-partners or business partners or friends or anybody wants to contest an estate, usually they don't need money. Like their lawyer essentially can just take their fees out of the estate, which I think a lot of people don't realize this because that's how estates get drained, and that's money that potentially would just end up going to lawyers instead of family members.
Yeah, that's right. So, and every state and territory has its own rules around these claims. They're called family provision claims. And what happens is there's set categories of people that at when somebody passes away, these set categories will always have the ability to claim against the estate. So in Queensland, we look at spouses, which is obviously a married person, but also a de facto spouse and civil partner, children and dependents. So anyone that satisfies those categories can then make a claim against an estate. So again, it's about having that conversation with a qualified professional to be like to realize, oh, hang on a second, I never formalized my divorce. We've just been separated for X number of years, or oh, I've got this child that I don't see or I don't want to give those funds to because they, are potentially struggling with addiction, or they mishandle money, or I haven't been in contact with them for ages. So it's not as simple as just leaving your inheritance to whoever you want. You also need to have in the back of your mind that the law does step in and it does make provision for people. And it is a very important consideration. A lot of strategy will go into your estate planning, if that's a risk for you.
And I like that I've really liked that you highlighted the idea of, not the idea, but the fact that family members would have to be dealing with the process if they're dealing with a will that has too many issues or holes in it. Because just from experience with clients, like when a family member passes away, for me, it's even a struggle to get them to just fill out a form to claim on their super or something like that. So them having to deal with courts and lawyers and all that extra stress, is not good at all. And and I think talking to anyone listening to this episode that probably doesn't have like a properly drafted will, or they think the will may not be properly drafted, leaving money to family members is great, but I think leaving them with peace of mind and less stress is probably even more important as well. And you see that,
Absolutely.
don't you?
Oh, we just see, we walk with families through some of the most sensitive and private times in their lives. We work a lot with clients that are also terminal, so they are, have a terminal illness, so they are really, that's, in the forefront of their mind is making it as smooth and as possible for clients. But we also, see people tragically, pass away completely unexpected, and the difference between having something prepared for your loved ones is so important. I personally have walked through a lot of death in my family and in my friendship groups. This is not something to us that we are not familiar with either on a professional level or a personal level. And it's why we're so passionate about it because death is something none of us can escape. So we really have to make sure that we put our loved ones in the best position we can. And anyone that has walked through, someone passing away and walks through the administrative hurdles, let alone the legal hurdles that take place, will have an appreciation for just how complex it can be.
And also the fact that you mentioned the insights that a lawyer provides when someone's filling out a will, that's massive. You're right, because there are so many different things apart from just assets that need to be taken into account. Can you just touch on a few of those things, including testamentary trusts and just extra, I guess, provisions or things that someone should be considering apart from just their assets?
Yeah, definitely. I think like a good estate planning lawyer will really have a conversation with you more about where your values lie and what your, dream legacy would be for your family. We might see clients that are really in a growth phase of their life where they are, heavily investing in business, or they are, aiming to purchase their first house. They might have a young family. They're in a very different space to, say, somebody preparing for retirement. And again, that estate plan will reflect that. And so, obviously, I mentioned before, if you have structures in place, you need a succession plan that covers those. And by structures, I mean things like companies and trusts and self-managed super. They all need to be dealt with. But some of those insights a lawyer will give you are things probably pretty practical when it comes down to it, but it's things that we see play out. Things like if you have young kids and you're appointing a guardian, the kind of conversation that I'll have with a client is that, okay, so your children are, say, 3 and 5, and you're appointing your family friend as a guardian, as often is the case, who perhaps doesn't have kids or already has 3 kids. Okay, that's great. Will that guardian have to buy a new house? Will they have to buy a new car? What does that look like for them to really take that role of guardian for you and for, your most precious people in your life, your kids? Do we need to consider setting up that guardian with a gift as well to, set up that guardian with a gift as well to, provide for them, and not in a way that's payment or a gift, but having a real consideration for the practical consequences of taking up some of these roles. Another common thing that we talk to clients about is who they might appoint as their executor, or if they're utilizing a testamentary trust, their trustee. And these people play really significant roles in a deceased estate process. They take on a lot of management considerations. And often I have clients who are like, oh, I want to appoint my brother and he lives in London. You go, well, really, when it comes to it, you really need to appoint somebody who's on the ground, able to access lawyers, not having to jump through hoops. As simple as if you appoint a foreign person, you can hinder yourself or burden the estate with additional tax complications. You can also force them to have to go and get things signed by a notary rather than simply a lawyer or a JP. It's little nuances like that that really make a huge difference to your loved ones. And I would love to touch on testamentary trust if that's okay.
Please, please. It's a topic that comes up regularly. It's because I have lots of clients, they don't know what they're called, but they say, look, oh, I want something that, my kids can't touch till a certain age, or, they mention, and plus there's a lot of misconceptions around what a testamentary trust actually is and how it actually works.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things that I think has been overcomplicated. And a real grievance of mine in the industry is that they are not presented as accessible for the everyday person when they should be. And so oftentimes, if you go to a lawyer that doesn't specialize in estate planning, if a will is just something that they're tacking on, or you're utilizing an online, template providing service, they're not going to raise with you the opportunity that testamentary trusts hold. And, for us, it's a real big passion piece that the testamentary trust isn't just about leaving an inheritance. It's about actually setting your family up with a legacy building tool. So, the big message about testamentary trusts is that their benefits, which I'll get into, can't be accessed at any other time in your life. You can't set up a testamentary trust after you've died with the inheritance. So I can't just set one up later. And I also can't set one up in your lifetime now. There's other types of trusts that we can use in your lifetime, but it's not a testamentary discretionary trust. And that's why we're so passionate about having this conversation at that will drafting time, because this is your opportunity to grab hold of these benefits. So when it comes to testamentary trusts, the majority of people we'll see utilize them in terms of couples will be people with young kids or grandkids. The reason for that is that testamentary trusts give you access to tax-free income. It's about $22,000 a year per child. So if we put that into, for example, my family context, I've got two young kids. If I were to pass away, instead of lumping my husband with $1 million in insurance, super assets, whatever it is, and then leaving it up to him to invest that, and then he would pay tax on any benefit of those investments. What I'm doing instead is utilizing the testamentary trust structure to be able to access those tax-free distributions. So he'll get, I've got two kids, he would get approximately $44,000 a year, tax-free to be able to spend on schooling, raising these kids. And obviously, you can just imagine that financial benefit. I'm sure as a financial advisor, your brain is ticking over at all the opportunity for that.
Definitely, definitely. And I was going to ask, and there are obviously some type of setups that are better than others as well with testamentary trusts. Would that be right?
Well, technically, a trust is simply holding funds for another. So, on some level, every will includes a very base level trust. When we're talking about the testamentary trust that we use, and any specialist estate planning lawyer would be using, it's this discretionary nature that we're after. It's called a testamentary discretionary trust, and really, that's a term used to describe the trustee, who's the managing mind, has the ability to choose where that inheritance goes at any point in time. And what that really looks like is your trustee would be getting advice, tax advice, financial advice at the time, and working out who's the best person to be giving these funds to. When it comes to adult kids, if you have adult kids, the most common reason we see people wanting to use testamentary trusts is where their adult children are in relationships. So again, moving aside from just the tax benefits, there's also this amazing benefit of asset protection with testamentary trusts, where instead of just giving an inheritance to an adult child who may be getting into a serious relationship or is recently married, and just letting that inheritance form part of their asset pool, you're able to set that inheritance aside in that testamentary trust. And, with some good advice and some good management of that trust, really able to boost up that asset protection so it doesn't just form part of that family pool.
These podcasts have been brought to you by Better Financial Planning Australia. To book a free 15-minute phone chat, visit betterfinancialplanning.com.au.
Another reason with adult kids is often adult children might be in risky careers. They might be giving advice, starting businesses, etc. Maybe they mismanage money, and that trust environment allows you to provide again that asset protection and that ability to help them manage that legacy. Much the same as the adult kids, the asset protection side is also a benefit with repartnering. So if you use myself as an example, again, let's say I pass away and I've left my inheritance to my husband just as an outright gift. If he were to repartner, then that inheritance just forms part of his asset base in that new partnership, remembering that he doesn't have to get married. He could just be in a de facto relationship and it would still form part of that asset pool. So, obviously, I want my legacy to be benefiting my children as well as my spouse. And so, what we've done is we've put it in a testamentary trust, and that way my husband can still access it for raising the kids, you know, building that family, but it's not automatically just going to form part of the pool if he ever were to repartner. And obviously, if either of us manage businesses or any client manages a business, then they're exposed to risk, and it would be very important that that professional risk doesn't bleed over onto any inheritance that we have.
And also there are other control things that can be put in place too, isn't there? Because I read an article about it. It was a few years ago now, but the idea of controlling your estate beyond your grave, you know, where I think this lady, she had set up a testamentary trust, and what was part of her will to have a testamentary trust, and she didn't want her children to access anything until they were, I think, 28, finished university and not married. It was something along those lines. I mean, this was overseas. I don't know if you can do the same thing in Australia, but I'm assuming there are other type of conditions that you can put in place as well.
Yeah, we would definitely try and persuade our clients not to include too many conditions that are of such a personal nature. We call it controlling from the grave. And on some level, we all want to do that. You know, we all want to make sure that our legacy is managed well. But there are sometimes I've had clients say, oh, I only want my kids to access the funds at 65, or, you know, these unique things put in there. They have to be married before they can access the funds. There is a limitation on how much you can put in a will, and a court will step in if it's, you know, particularly burdensome or ridiculous. But using the testamentary trust, we can create an environment where perhaps a particular person is not the controlling mind of that inheritance until they've deemed certain provisions. So the most common one is age. You know, my children are 4 and 2. There's no way I want them accessing an inheritance at 18. And so in the testamentary trust, we can put there, okay, so my spouse is going to manage those funds for them, and only when they turn, you know, 25, then they have the opportunity to be put in as the trustee, as the managing mind. We also have a lot of other roles that we can play within testamentary trusts. There's a role called the appointer, which is somebody that sits in the background and can remove the trustee. So if you feel a bit nervous about the trustee's role and how much control they have, we can put in another level of control. There's so much you can do. There's so much flexibility, and I've never drafted a testamentary trust that looks exactly the same. It definitely is customized exactly to your particular situation, and that's because everybody's priorities and values sit slightly differently, and so we're able to really strategically formulate something that gives you that peace of mind and sets your family up with those opportunities.
I just think back to when I was 18. If I had received a big amount of money, I think it would have been on a Honda with like a subwoofer sound system and 22-inch rims and who knows what else, you know. So yeah, it's definitely important to think about these things. I agree, and it's actually a concern of a lot of my clients. When I speak to them, they do say to me, "Look, I don't want my kids accessing, you know, $1 million, $2 million at the age of 18," you know, because. Yeah, they might have a partner, and I think a partner is a big one. That is a concern because a lot of people do see relationships break down and people being influenced with money as well, you know. And on the topic of DIY wills and simple will kits and things like that, are there any stories that you can share or horror stories that you've either come across yourself or you've heard of happening where somebody had a will, did it themselves, or just sort of went down the cheap route? Thought it was foolproof, and obviously it turned out not to be.
Yeah, so I've done, unfortunately, been involved with quite a few. The most common scenario is that they just get lost or damaged. And, you know, that sounds quite uneventful, but when your family knows you've done a will, or, you know, often what happens is as somebody is in those very last stages of life, they'll say, you know, remember I put the will with the paperwork on my, you know, in that back cupboard somewhere. And when the family goes searching, it's not there, or perhaps it's significantly damaged, or they can only find a copy. And then at that point, they have to go through, you know, getting in contact with a lawyer, getting advice, working out what the backup option is. You know, if there is no will, what then happens? I've I've had a few matters where we've had a post office will or a DIY will that then became very out of date. And obviously, when you work with a law firm, typically the lawyer is going to check in with you every year or couple of years and just make sure, that you haven't changed your life too much. But I've had estates where the person who's passed away has gotten divorced. They've moved states. The people that they've left their inheritance to have all passed away, and so you've literally got this will that's completely useless. But we have to honor it as best we can, and so you end up, doing all these unique legal things where we apply for the will to be outworked, but on the basis that this person subs in and that person subs in, and this will then apply. And at the end of the day, if you don't write a will, the government has set up a will structure for you. It's called our intestacy rules, and oftentimes outworking a DIY will is so complex that it's almost better to just rely on the intestacy rules in terms of streamlined approach. The other common one I see is a DIY will list a number of specific gifts that no longer exist or are written in a way that they can't be outworked. A common example will be, I leave my daughter $60,000, but there isn't $60,000. And the willmaker will just assume that whatever's left in the accounts will be given. But that's not always the case. And a gift will just fail. So if there's not exactly $60,000 in there or more to give, then that's it. She doesn't get 55. She doesn't get 57. She just gets nothing. And so that can be an area of complexity too. But like I said, the others have all been asterisks and then writing more in the back or arrows going here, there, and everywhere. Lots of fun.
And also on that point, actually, because if you could just explain, and just on the points of the arrows going back and forth and the lines, with us, even with getting clients to fill out their super beneficiary forms when we send
Oh,
them through,
yeah.
something I explain to clients is that even them, 80% of the time there are mistakes on them, and it could be a box that wasn't ticked, or it could be something that's been crossed out or not initialed by everyone, so if something like that can go wrong, imagine a will, and also, could you just highlight as well just a couple of the risks of dying intestate, so dying without a will? Because this is something I talk to my clients about regularly, and I think if you can just briefly touch on that, because there could be people listening to this that don't have a DIY will and have been thinking of doing one, or thinking of not doing a will now, and oh look, I'll just deal with it later when I have bigger assets, because it can cause serious issues as well.
Absolutely. So the main one that we see with intestacy is the person who you would love to be in control of your affairs isn't able to because they're not on the list. So there is a gr order of priority that is set out in the Uniform Civil Procedure Rules, which is just a piece of legislation that was created by our government that sets out the people that should be in charge of your affairs if you don't nominate anyone properly. And unfortunately, this can mean that you might end up with someone in charge that you really wouldn't want to be or really shouldn't be. A really common element of this is where family doesn't all get along, or you might think they get along, and then grief comes into the piece, and grief outworks very differently in people. And so, order of priority first is a spouse, which includes de facto, but second is children. And oftentimes, not all children will get along, particularly adult children, where parents have been unwell, they've been caring for elderly parents, and there might be a bit of, bitterness or resentfulness amongst how things have been dealt with. And so then all of a sudden, all the children have to act together with the deceased estate, and that can be incredibly complex and difficult. It can mean that the cost of dealing with your estate goes up exponentially because, say, there's four children who all need to be executors, or it's called administrators if there's an intestacy. Say they all have to act in that role and they can't get along. That then leaves the lawyer go in between all of those parties, and that automatically puts costs up. And the other end of it is obviously who's receiving your inheritance. And again, if you die without a will or without an effective will, you don't get a say in who gets what. And so, if you have kids, the spouse is entitled to the first 150,000, which isn't much in the scheme of things these days, and household chattels. And they also get a portion of whatever's else. They either get half if there's one child, or a third if there's more. So it's one of those things where, I mean, these days most people's properties alone are worth 500,000 plus, and so you end up with very complex scenarios of minor children receiving benefits, which obviously have to be held for them until they turn 18, and that could potentially be the family home. And yeah, it can just get way more complex than what people realize. The other really sad situation that we sometimes see, or actually, I should say, often see, most people who don't get wills, they often don't have kids, and they might not have a partner, and they think, I don't need a will. I don't care where things go. It can just bounce around, you know, and I'm going to live as big of a life as I can whilst I can. But often the next people in line to receive your estate are actually your parents if you don't have a partner or kids. And that has huge complications for your parents' retirement. It can bump them out of receiving pensions. It can make them reach caps when it comes to assessments for like aged care, benefits, positions for certain nursing homes and retirement villages. It can make them bump out of that. And often the inheritance is not enough to substitute the benefit of those concessions and pension. And so then your parents are left in a position where they are having to, you know, work very closely with an advisor just to try and stretch what they have. So those are the sort of sad situations we see with intestacy.
Yeah, and also what I explain to clients a lot as well is that even if the funds end up going to who you want them to, that can be dragged out, and that can be a much longer process and a much more emotionally draining process as well if someone dies intestate without a will. Would that be correct as well?
Absolutely. And,
Yeah.
you know, you still have the same risks with those family provision claims, and people still come out of the woodwork and say, you know, oh, I was your dad's partner for this many years, or I'm actually one of the children. And none of that other complexity gets removed simply by not having a will. In fact, you're just adding the complexity of intestacy. And the other thing I really want to emphasize is that some of that complexity about intestacy is that your loved ones just don't know what you wanted. There is such peace of mind that comes from knowing that your loved one put in the time and effort to think about what they wanted and outworked that properly. And I sit with families that are reading that will for the first time. I see the relief on their face of knowing that, you know, you made a decision. You took that decision out of their hands, which is such a blessing. And they have peace of mind that what you wanted can be outworked. And it's truly actually a gift. That element of the will is a gift to your family. That and making sure that your affairs are relatively tidy, which we work with clients to do.
So, for me, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, that's listening to this episode that thinks, you know what, I really do need to do a will, or we need to get a new will done, or have our estate planning reviewed, what would you say is the best way for them to do that?
Yep, so absolutely, a conversation is always worth it. So you can just go to our website, which is fulljameslaw.com.au, and on there is a contact us, which is actually my calendar, and you'll book in with me directly. So that'd be the best. Otherwise, a lot of our clients follow us on Instagram, or LinkedIn, and we are very aware that we'll sit on the to-do list for a long time. So, there's lots of useful information on there at least to keep it front of mind.
No, definitely. And what I'll do is I'm going to add your website to the description of this episode as well. So people could just follow that as well if they need to. And lastly, Romy, I like to finish all my episodes off with a dad joke. And I had so many to choose from because with wills, there's a lot of the word will is just, anyway, I tried to think of something estate planning related. I couldn't find anything half appropriate. This is actually a pretty good one, but I once submitted 10 puns to a joke competition. And I really thought that with that many, one was sure to be a winner. Sadly, no pun intended. No pun
Was
intended.
that
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
it?
All right, I've got had a backup one in case that one didn't actually work. Because it's saying no pun intended. This is no pun intended. Because it was 10 puns submitted.
I'm not witty enough. I'm so
No pun.
sorry.
No, it's okay. It's all right. Well, why did the old man fall down the well? He couldn't see that well.
Okay, got that one.
Yeah, you know, my kids got me a joke book years ago, like a dad joke book, and it's, I used to use it, but I can't find it anymore. So I've gone back to Googling jokes, and yeah, I mean, I know this is obvious, but a lot of dad jokes are really bad. So it's hard to find one that's half good.
You need some chat GPT assistance there.
Yes, or a couple of beers, one or the other helps. But now, Romy, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. And I really hope anyone listening to this will take it a lot more seriously, this topic, and even better, pass this on to a family member or a friend that needs to listen to it as well.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Likewise. Thank you. Thanks for joining us on Sharing More Than the Sheets. Please make sure you subscribe to be updated with future episode releases and feel free to share this episode with any friends or family that you think it might benefit. Please visit us at sharingmorethanthesheets.com.au to submit questions or requests for future podcast topics. These podcasts have been brought to you by Better Financial Planning Australia. To book a 15-minute phone chat, visit betterfinancialplanning.com.au.